Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So as the mindfulness bell restores us sacred silence, we then rest in that stillness. The Bible, it says, be still and know that I am God. So stillness is the language of God. It's where the knower abides. And when we become comfortable with that silence, with that peace that passes all understanding, well, then that becomes our default mechanism. It becomes our go-to place. We just stop, maybe take a breath. And with that exhalation, we go home. We arrive in that stillness, in that peace. And then our capacity to respond is not some knee-jerk reaction to the outer, but is an inner response from a place that embraces what life brings us and meets it with gratitude, whatever life might bring us. My prayer partner has been having very vivid dreams, and they're numinous dreams that are taking him into this realization that is beyond mental. His therapist said, when you have the dreams that are speaking to your soul, notice how you feel. And that feeling is essential in order for you to hear the deep message. If you should be uncomfortable with that feeling, she said, well, then you are denying the dreams their access to you. And so as he shared that this morning in our prayer session, I realize that whatever arises, even if it's an uncomfortable emotion from a dream that's revealing something that perhaps needs to be met, by not denying that emotional experience, we then have the capacity to embrace life just as life is. So this Sunday, we set an intention to be fully present, to ask the meaningful question that will give us a meaningful life, and to be open to discover a shift, an inherent shift, out of the local finite self that would have us appear to be separate into the realization that we are part of the infinite one, as Lisa and Etika sang in that beautiful song, may I become a reflection of the infinite one. So from that place of our inherent oneness, I invite you to open your eyes, come to rest in the sacred moment now. You know, it's funny, life is the great teacher, all of life. And when you become teachable, well, then you begin to notice it's everywhere preaching a gospel. This morning on my Zen calendar, I love it when I got God smacked. Whoever it was said, when you know that you are an eternal nothing, as Cindy, you're an eternal nothing, well, then every moment is here for your amusement. Every moment. So it's not a good moment or a bad moment or a sad moment or a happy moment. It's just a moment. And then life happens. We have a proliferation of bunny rabbits where I live in Five Points. And I love bunny rabbits. I don't know why. They're a form of rodent, I would assume. You know, when I see the little mice or the little rats, I kind of balk. But when I see the bunny rabbits hopping across my yard with the chipmunks, I think it's time for a party. So you see my response mechanism, Shay, is different. I have value judgments. Some bugs I consider pretty if they have wings and they flutter around like butterflies. But then I have other bugs in my garden that I think, oh, you nasty little thing, you're eating up my plants and I need to take care of the plants. So we're all in relationship with life, and life's going to give us exactly what we need on this journey. And you know, we had some Supreme Court decisions, and as a gay man, I was a little taken aback by one of those decisions. And then I wrote, okay, maybe this is the universe saying we're moving in a new direction and we have to rethink how we're going to respond to the LGBTQ community. I took the little rainbow flags and put them around the center. I still have a modicum of loyalty to my community. And there is a great big rainbow peace sign in the classroom over there, in case you haven't noticed it. So if that's an issue for you and you feel that you couldn't patronize a place where there is a gay pastor, well, you might as well know I'm a gay man and I'm the minister here. And so that's a disclaimer for those of you who might not want to patronize someone who might be of a different persuasion as you are. I remember when we lived in San Francisco, Harvey Milk was there before he got killed. And Harvey Milk said, for gay people, this was in the 70s, he says they have to be willing to be seen. They have to come out of the closet in order for them to be accepted. And we were living at a time where everything was closeted. My sweet husband was a school teacher, and he was terrified of anybody in the school system finding that out. Well, now you know what? He's not afraid. He's proud. And he was the most loving, the most popular teacher. And he was no pedophile. He was just a loving presence. And so could we purge this way of thinking about certain people by our willingness to say, okay, the quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven. That's what Shylock said in The Merchant of Venice. If you cut me, do I not bleed? Yes, I am a Jew, but I'm a nice Jew. That's what he was saying in The Merchant of Venice. So I'm going to be exploring this idea of shifting into freedom in this month of July. I always try to make it patriotic. And this is a class that I taught years ago by a man named Locke Kelly. And he talks about shifting out of the local mind that would have us think that we are somebody separate from everybody else into our true nature, which is the infinite mind, the infinite one. In other words, you're moving from the content of your consciousness to the context of reality. So he would use this metaphor. Think of yourself as like a little white fluffy cloud in the sky. And there are all the other white fluffy clouds. And your job is to keep your cloud nice and white and fluffy while everybody else is getting dark and dismal. And he says, and then one day you say, oh my God, I'm not a little cloud in the sky. I'm the very sky itself. Now that's the shift. You move out of the local self into this infinite realization of the oneness. And so he describes what it's like when you make that shift out of me into we, and then ultimately into all, because there is no me. And this is what he says. Something awakens, and it's a shift into what he calls open-hearted awareness. Now, His Holiness the Dalai Lama spoke about his religion as kindness, I spoke about last Sunday, and what this open-hearted awareness that Locke Kelly's pointing toward is where the heart and the head come together. His Holiness the Dalai Lama called it the bodhicitta, which is the heart-mind. So when they can come together, not as separate things, but as a unity, well, then our thoughts are loving thoughts. Here's how he describes it. He says, we will need to find a way to discover, uncover, and recover this essential awareness. Discovering awareness involves as much unlearning as it does learning. We've been programmed. We've been lied to. We have this fakakta idea that we were born in sin and that we need to have the blood of Jesus in order for us to go to a place where only certain people will be allowed. No, forget that learning that you have. He says, but I'm convinced that there is a way for each of us to shift into this essential awareness that will heal us. to feel the freedom that it offers when you get out of this judgment place where you're condemning some and praising others, and then learn to live from this essential awareness that is waiting for all of us, to learn to live from there. You can glimpse this freedom of awareness and shift into it as easily as you can now shift from being aware of reading this book to being aware of the sensations in your right hand. You tune in to what does it feel like to know that you're connected to everything. Those little bunny rabbits are my relatives, Ms. Tia. And when they bounce around with their little white tails, they make me smile. This awareness within all creation is awake. And that's why he calls it the awake awareness. It's not asleep. You know, your mind is always thinking thoughts, but behind the mind is this one who is aware that you're in Alabama, but it's not thinking the thought that you're in Alabama. So there's this awareness that's inherent. Could we defer to that and hang out in awareness? You know, I like hanging around with dogs and cats because they don't have a lot of thoughts in there. They just have a lot of awareness. And you know, when they tune into your emotional body. I was telling Jody, I feel haunted by my animals that have transitioned. And she said, aren't you grateful that they're still here? So he goes on to say, I call this awake awareness, this shift. Discovering awake awareness is the key to transformation of consciousness. It leads to our ability to live from freedom and well-being and the loving connection wherever we go. How many of you want to be in that loving connection wherever you go? To be free of the tyranny of your little inner crazy one. You know, Emerson is one of my heroes, and he pointed to this shift all the time. He said, it is only our finite self that wails and suffers. He said, simultaneously, there is this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose. So who are we going to be? Are we going to be that smile of the one who's peaceful and awake? Or are we going to be that finite self that wails and suffers and ain't it awful and stomps our feet? And I got to change the situation, Hal. This isn't what I want. Nah. So, he says, we can be free from all that suffering. He goes on to say, awake awareness is the essence of both our ground of being, with a capital B, and the source of our mind. So this transformation is a simple shift into awake awareness. From the background of our consciousness, it now goes into the foreground. So the background, which was this awareness, now moves into the foreground, and we begin to see things not from my preferences, from the need to control and project an outcome, but we see things as evolving and unfolding on their terms. Anybody been in a relationship? Yeah. And all the programming and expectations isn't going to make it unfold the way it inherently will unfold if you get out of the trying to manipulate an outcome. And then it's eternally surprised. I've been with Trey for almost 50 years, and he continues to surprise me more and more and more. I'm telling you. So, he goes on to say this, we can learn how to shift out of our thought-based mind and into an awareness-based way of knowing. An awareness-way base of knowing. In other words, do you think you love me, Michael, or do you know you love me? The mind will think, and maybe tomorrow it doesn't think that way, but the awareness is always there. So he said, this is an awareness way of knowing. Then, from awareness-based knowing, we can embody, connect, and welcome every experience. We welcome every experience. They're not bad experiences and good experiences. And he says, the feeling of embodied awareness-based knowing is similar to being in a flow state. Don't you love being in the flow? Where you get up in the morning and you know that life is inviting you into a flow, and you can make it challenging or you can let the flow take you. That's why it's so fun having a dog, because you get to walk the dog and you're in the dog's flow. And you want to make it about my flow, but the dog will never let you make it about your flow. It's their flow and they let you know it. Cats are the same way. So you get into this flow state. You get into a place called the zone. You fall into a place of love. This is the shift. And you do selfless service everywhere. Now that's the place to get to. You're in a field of love. You're in a flow. It's effortless. And you're in service to the moment. Sounds like we're tending the flowers, Mr. Adam. You know, he brought in, I come here on Sunday morning, I'm here at 7:15, and all there's buckets of flowers and buckets of flowers, and I've got to put the table on the thing and put the things out for the brunch, and what am I spending at the first hour is making flowers here, making flowers there, making flowers, and if that weren't enough, he comes in about half an hour later, and he has 10 more buckets of flowers. And I said, oh, my buckets overfloweth. You're all going to get some flowers to take with you. I'm in the zone of the flowers. And then we put Thich Nhat Hanh on a little thing, and he's speaking about, and he says, and when you move into mindful awareness, this is the shift, can you notice the flowers of peace flowering in the garden of your heart? The flower of peace flowering in the garden of your heart. Thich Nhat Hanh, that's the invitation. And then you look around you, the flowers are everywhere all around you. Could I find the flower in my heart and let it flower? It's just the right brain way of looking at things. So he goes on to say, being fully alive, you'll be laughing. Being in this place, it's like you're laughing with a close friend. It is like being fully alive in the now that you forget yourself. When you're fully alive in the now, you forget the widow one who's got control issues and who doesn't think that things should be the way they are. And that's the why me, why this, why that. You know, that person kind of falls away and you say, well, this is the time that I'm in right now. Could I be with that? You forget yourself, and you're living from an awareness-based knowing gives you the freedom of choice. Awake awareness, he says, is invisible, contentless, formless, boundless, and timeless. So this awareness is not bound by thoughts, by form, by time, by your history or your herstory, by your future projections. It's this invisible essence that we get to open to, to kind of hang out with. Well, do you like being with that little invisible essence, Miss Reva, that you wake up with every morning, that's peaceful and calm and ready to embrace the day? That's the first quality. The second quality is awake awareness is who we are prior to the personal conditioning that we usually turn to as our identity. This awake awareness is who you were before you were. There's a wonderful Zen saying that pisses people off, and I like to say it because it does. It says, you know why you're so miserable? Because 99.9% of the things you talk about are all about you, and you aren't. We've identified with this self, the finite self that wails and suffers, and that isn't the truth of us. So the invitation is to shift into this true nature, which is the self out of which all these selves come, which is this creative intelligence that is filled with love. That's the second quality. The third quality, awake awareness, is the ground of being, and it's the same in all of us, and our individuality simply arises out of that oneness. Now, ours is a teaching of oneness. It was Albert Einstein that says there are two kinds of people, those who think there are two and those who don't. So if there aren't two, there's only one here, and it's all the one life of picturing in multiplicity. So that's that essential shift. It may take lifetimes to get to this realization that what we have struggled with so much is not the world out there. We're struggling with our response to the world out there. There's that response thing again, Shay. This response to the world. The world is kind of crazy. You know, I've learned that probably the greatest reflection I ever heard was, and you get the metaphor, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere. There's got to be, with all the stuff that's going on in the world, surely it's got to be there. So awake awareness is this ground of being, and it's the same in all of us. And then this last little bit over here. When we discover the important ability to step back into this awake awareness, we are no longer identified with our worried thoughts and our fearful emotions. And that which is aware of fear is not fearful. That's the balcony. When you're aware of the fear, well, the awareness isn't afraid. It just says, ah, there's my little fear. Ah, there's my little anger. Ah, there's my anxiety. Ah, there's my confusion. It just rises up because we're human and we have those. So we don't try to get rid of it anymore. No. That which is aware of fear is not afraid. It's that pain, it's that unpainful, painful heart. When we awake, awareness is then experienced as an inherent energy within everything, and we feel a unity then with all of life, and we begin to move from an open-mindedness to an open-heartedness. And the expression of awake awareness then knows an unconditional love and an interconnectedness with everything. It's all part of this web of knowing, this web of life, and we're all part of it. We're not separate. I think that's why we get these four leggeds in our lives, to teach us unconditional love. Boy, are they such gurus to all of us. Every one of them, even the wild ones out there. So he says, recognition of awake awareness as the ground of being itself is like returning home and resting as who we have always been. I have arrived, I am home, as the little calligraphy says back here, the Thich Nhat Hanh pen. I'm home in that place where I'm not separate from you. And so Lot Kelly talks about waking up, and he says, first we wake up from the illusion of the separate self. We wake up from our programming, our conditioning, our judgments, all that stuff that we've been held to think is sacrosanct. And then, he says, the second waking is we wake in to who we really are. And oftentimes what arises when you have the courage to wake within, well, then comes little fearful Freddy. And then comes crazy Curtis and Arnie the you-know-what. And all these parts of ourselves surface because we're waking up to the unhealed parts of ourselves. Could we be loving enough to invite them in? And then you hear Rumi, this being of human is like a guest house. Come knocking at the door of your consciousness are your fears and your worries and your judgments. Rumi says, invite them all in. They may be coming to clean out your house. And they can only clean it out when you recognize them. Okay, here's Connie, the perfectionist, who wants to be critical of everybody. So let her have her day. Thank you for sharing. Tell me more, until she's finished ad nauseum her whole tirade. Now, when she feels heard and safe, well, then she'll stop tormenting you with her opinions. I've learned this from first, and of course, if you marry critical Curtis, well, then you don't have to worry too much about it because you're having a dialogue with your partner. And then you get to be there to walk each other home. We get to be there to walk each other home. And isn't that a sacred place to be? When I forget who I am, Cindy can remind me and help me find my balance, find my center. So my default mechanism isn't stomping my feet and leaving the room, but my default mechanism is stopping long enough to recognize that this is an uncomfortable situation. Could I allow it to surface so that I could shift out of the operating center of me and the neurotic me into an operating center that's holding that? You might say it's the balcony position where I can see clearly now. The pain is gone. I can see all the obstacles that were in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind, because it's going to be a bright, bright, sunshiny day. When I walk to the edge of the light that I see, instead of being mired in the darkness that I feel is overwhelming me. So could life be a beautiful dance where we step up to the edge of life on life's terms? This Thursday, my sweet husband had a little thing on his face, and he was told to go into a little place over there in Madison where he would have it removed. And then we were going to go out and have a nice romantic little lunch together. So we dressed up in nice clothes. We went to the place to have it removed. And little did I realize that I was signing up for a 3-hour stint in a room where you sat there and you sat there in the silence as one little cancer spot was taken off of one little cancer. And then you had to sit for another hour if you went back to have the cancer re-dug out in case they didn't get all the cancer. And so Tia's texting me saying, how is it at the doctor's office? And I said, I feel like I'm sitting in a room with a bunch of zombies. And so then I said, okay, this is an opportunity for me to work on myself. I've got to find that piece that I keep talking about on Sundays when I see everybody here in a little fear place of what's going to happen. And when Trey came out of the room, he said, oh, you wouldn't believe what they told me. They said, your cancer isn't as bad as the one before. We had to dig out 8 centimeters on him. You had only 0.8 centimeter. But if we don't get it, I said, too much of the fear, too much of the cancer talk. I mean, it was one big operation, going in, coming out, with bandages on faces, bandages on ears, bandages on nose, bandages everywhere, and not a word was said. And I'm trying to find that little peaceful place, and I actually smiled at somebody and thought, maybe you're not allowed to smile here. And so this woman was wheeled in a wheelchair with her assistant, and she wasn't fully clothed. And she said, aren't you going to put my clothes on? Aren't you? So she brought some laughter into this otherwise zombie-like experience. And so she's putting her shoes on, and she's giggling. I said, you've got such a lovely attitude. And she said, thank you. I don't think she knew where she was, but God knows I needed someone who did not know where they were, because she was lifting the whole thing out of this place of She said, this is a serious shift that will change your life. And we get small glimpses of it as we go through life. Small glimpses of when we're navigating in a skillful way, and then glimpses when we're not navigating in a skillful way. So this Sunday, I'm exploring the idea of living in the questions. Something I love talking about, because the mind is 10 times more active when it's in the question than when it's given an answer. So could we court that place in us that is far more creative? Like, let's say you're in a marriage with somebody and you lived in the question, how could I be the most loving partner to my mate? Well, then that question every day would be a creative way. Maybe I'll bring him coffee in bed. Maybe I'll put flowers by the side. Maybe I'll sing a love song. Maybe I'll, you know, if you're living in the question, but if you live in the, well, this is what I expect. I expect this, that, and they didn't do that. And then you're caught up in your expectations and your resistance. And so living in the question is a lovely place to find an answer that is fresh. You know, how might I bring my greatest love to the planet Earth at this stage of my ministry? How might I not make it about changing your thinking and changing your life, because that never worked, into how could we embody the love that we already are? It's already always there waiting for each one of us. And this is a truth that has been spoken since time began. In my library of a million books, the one that I've been avoiding, which is always calling me, is called Perennial Wisdom for the Spiritually Independent. And it's the great spiritual insights of all the ages, and they were all saying the same thing, that what you are is divine, but you have to figure it out for yourself. And they start with five little questions. The first question is, who am I? And you ask the question, who am I? Because it's to realize that you're not the local self. The more you stay with the question, who am I, you realize that you're something so much bigger, that you're a field of awareness out of which all individuality arises. So the first question, and he premises this whole book on the section of the who am I question. He goes to the Bhagavad Gita. Here's what the Bhagavad Gita says. There was never a time when I was not, who am I? Nor you, nor these princes were not. There will never be a time, this is the Bhagavad Gita, when we shall cease to be. And as the soul experiences in this body, infancy, youth, and old age, so finally it passes into another. And the wise have no delusions about this one. Those external relations which bring cold and heat, pain and happiness, well, they just come and go. And they are not permanent. So endure them bravely. This is Krishna speaking in the Bhagavad Gita. Endure them bravely, O Prince. The hero whose soul is unmoved by circumstances, the one who accepts pleasure and pain with equanimity, only this one is fit for immortality. Whoa, I think that's kind of a spiritual slap in the face, don't you, Cindy? Only the one who can meet all of this with equanimity is fit. That which is not shall never be, and that which is shall never cease to be. To the wise, these truths are self-evident. The spirit which pervades all that we see is imperishable. Nothing can destroy spirit. Spirit was never born and spirit never dies, and you are that eternal nothing.
Well, I am an eternal nothing who'll always be here.
Well, that's who you are. You're an eternal life that's waking up to its nature as soul. I was listening to Ram Dass this morning, and he says that you approach the end of this incarnation, he says, the only way to do it is to know you are a soul with a body, not a body with a soul. And the soul is an eternal something. And so if we have parents that are going to be making transitioning, even a pet who's making a transition, we know that their eternal soul is still going to be here with us. And we who are on the threshold of making a transition, you know, I don't mean to say that flippantly, because in a week or so, I'm going to be out in Oregon spreading the ashes of my twin sister. And I've been struggling with how to be in that experience with my nieces and nephews, with their mother. And yet I'm just going to be as a loving presence of someone who knows that she's still here, that because I feel her all the time. So who am I? I am an eternal soul. And that's the first question. The second question he asks is, where did we come from?
Well, I think that's kind of a funny thing. Where did we come from?
And here he quotes a poem. This is it, and I am it, and you are it.
and so is that. And he is it, and she is it, and it is it, and that is that. Oh, it is this, oh, and it is thus, and it is them, and it is us, and it is now, and here it is, and here we are, and this is it. It's all it. Where did we come from? We came from the one that knows no other. And so when you know we came from life itself, from beingness itself, from spirit, well, then that second question takes you even closer. Now, these are the questions that will take you to the truth of who we are. Who am I? I am not separate from you. I am the source itself. Where do we come from? We came from wherever everything comes from. We came from life itself. We came from the breath within the breath. You know, it's that wonderful book called The Story of Gaia. This scientist from Oxford, PhD in quantum mechanics, she said, the universe didn't start with the Big Bang. She said it started with the exhalation of Brahman. Now, what a beautiful metaphor that is. And she said it's 13.8 billion years old. Now, to think that we emerged from the breath of the one, well, it's kind of a fun place to originate, isn't it? So, yeah, the second question is, where do you come from? The third question is, where am I going? And it says, this shows us that we arise in and return to our true self. We're going home to what we really are. That's why we come here on Sundays, to just have a taste of that something, that essence self that we all share. The one life, yes, we're going home to our true self, and there is nothing to fear regarding death, because we are free to die fearlessly, and we are free to live courageously. To die without fear, knowing that spirit never dies, and to live courageously, because the life that we have, and you know, courageous comes from the French word cour, which means to live with heart. So could we bring our heart into the quality of our life, you know, and we are free to live courageously in service to universal justice and compassion. To live in service to universal justice and compassion. Don't you love the simplicity of that? To live in service to justice and compassion. The fourth question he asks then is, how then shall we live? Knowing that we shall die someday. How then shall we live? There's a whole book written on that about how then shall we live. And to find, what does he say here? How then shall we live? Offers us practices to apply the wisdom that's gleaned from the previous questions into our everyday encounters that compose our ordinary lives. We live our life fully, one breath at a time, one moment at a time. And then the last question, which is the hardest question to all, we ask why. Why are we here anyway? What's it all about? Are we here to grow? Are we here to learn lessons? You know, if you think you're here to learn lessons and you pray to learn lessons, well, guess what? Life's going to give you lots of lessons. So I say never pray to learn a lesson. But then he answers this question of why are we here by taking us into the biblical story, one of the most ancient ones, the story of Job. And we know Job had this horrible outcome at the very end. He's sitting on the hill. He's got sores all over his body. He's lost everything, his family, and he's sitting on the ash heap of life. You know, basically, why me? Why me, God? And the ultimate realization, this author says, is to reach that place of the deepest acceptance. Whatever life has given you, as Job had to realize, could I accept that that is where I am right now, at this stage of my life? Not push it away, but meet it with a gratitude and ask the question, where is the blessing in this? What is life showing me yet again? Could I trust that life is bringing me something that is painful, but it is a growth opportunity? And could I discover that growth opportunity by asking the question, where is the blessing here? Where is the pony in this experience? You know, where is the sense of humor that will set me free from my reactive nature? Anne-Marie sent me this beautiful quote by Emerson on one of her Zen calendars, and he said that there is this instinct within all of us. He says it's that basic instinct, and he said we can trust that instinct to the end, no matter where life takes you. And so as she sent me that beautiful quote, I thought, well, what is that instinct? There's the question. What is that instinct that I can trust to the end? And then I hear Emerson, since he was the source of that, there is this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose. Thich Nhat Hanh refers to that. When I see this love flowering in my heart, well, then a smile forms on my lips. So could I trust that that smile, when it should arise from within,
is a returning home to that very place that is the refuge from my reactive nature. So Emerson also says that we are here to pray. Prayer is the contemplation of the facts of life from the jubilant and beholden soul. So there's another hint as to where we get to shift into. We get to shift into the jubilant and beholden soul. That means that we are beholden, we are grateful for whatever that life has given us. We're jubilant because we're still alive, we're still on the planet. I mean, just to wake up every morning with a smile on your face, I hear, what's her name, Carole King, and show the world all the love in your heart, because people are going to make you better, they're going to smile, yes they will, because you're beautiful as you feel. So you realize some of the song masters in the past were preaching a gospel of how to be in this world. You got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love of your heart. People are going to treat you better. They're going to smile. Yes, they will, because they're reflecting your beauty with their beauty. And then you think of life as one big reflection of itself. Are we reflecting the good, the God, the possible? And then the questions are, what is possible for me in this lifetime? What is the potential that I'm here to live up to? I'm going to close with a beautiful poem by Gigi Mejia, and I've used it before. And then I'll do a little meditation. This will lead us into the meditation. And this is a poem that Gigi wrote about questions, the sacredness of questions. And she brings to it the wisdom of a student of truth. Ask the question from the local self, but she can also ask the question from that higher self. So listen to this beautiful poem called Questions. She writes, seven laws for a lifelong path, only seven, she says. Asks the question. So when I am old, really, really old, oh, like 90, will I have worked with those laws, or will I have bent over backwards to please others and to fit in? She asks that question. Or another question, did I desire and intend with passion and then let it go? So many of us have these intentions to live this incredible life, and then something happens and we just step away. Did I give from my heart and consciously receive? She asked that beautiful question. Did I give from my heart? And the key then is to receive. Will I have played enough in the field of pure potentiality? It's a lovely question. Did I discover my dharma, my purpose here? I put all egoic emotions away. And in that, did I detach from old stories and conditioning? We can smile to that question. She asked another one, did I open my heart? But why wait until then, she asks, till I'm 90? So now, right now, in this day, while there's still time, will I invite them in, my favorite guests? And she gives them names. Names like grace, the givingness of the universe. In any moment, I invite compassion in, that part of my heart that can love tenderly what's arising. I invite empathy in. Boy, empathy is, to me, the greatest place where we connect in oneness. We can feel each other. I invite courage, integrity, and most of all, she says, I invite in love. Have they eaten at my table often enough, these guests of the soul? And finally, the biggest question of all, have I given my gifts to the world? Have I loved enough in this lifetime? And how much, she asks, is ever enough? And she must have given a sigh, because the next little phrase is, I have no answers. I have no answers, but Spirit knows. And I, she smiles, I just stay in the question. And let Spirit guide me, knowing all is well. So, Jody, you want to ring the bell with that beautiful poem? We let the question come alive in us. Have I loved enough? And what is enough? Have I opened to give and receive? So as we open to these questions that reverberate in our heart, we hear this sweet little voice from within saying, yes, yes, I am opening. I am opening. My heart is ready to receive. Yes, I'm giving my gift by showing up for the moment and meeting the moment and meeting life on life's terms. Yes. And so as I live in the question, am I grateful for this amazing life that I've been given? I respond by saying, yes, what a sacred life. And so as we shift into this consciousness that is more inclusive than exclusive, well, then we can ask the question, have I opened myself to an intimacy with life in the grandest way, where I see the beloved everywhere? Wheresoe'er I look, I see my own self reflected as the one, namaste, seeing itself. And so as we play with the question and we ask the right question, well, then the right question will take us into a response from the knower within. So I smile to the one asking the questions. Can I promise the questioner to be gentle and kind? As our questions become empowering questions, expanding questions, questions that set us free and heal, questions that liberate. As I say yes, well, then I'm becoming the fashioning factor from a shift into freedom, where this infinite presence that lies stretched in smiling repose is asking the questions, well, then how may we serve in a loving way a world that seems to be challenged right now? How can I offer the most expanded gift of life, of love? Can I be in a flow of now? Observe what's arising in the now moment. Could I say this too is good, this too is God? And I open to receive the blessing in all of it, all of it. Not just the stuff that feels good. And so we open to the messages from our body. There may be a sensation of pain. And if we just do a little stretch, maybe that pain just abates a bit. So we're responding to the body, the physical body. And now we open to our emotional body. And we observe what quality of emotions have been arising recently. And could we be loving to those emotions, whatever they might be, knowing that they have arisen within us to help us find compassion for ourselves and for others who may be going through other similar challenges. Now we open to the thought patterns that seem to arise in our mind. Could we be loving and gentle when our mind wants to run away with an idea? And could we say to this mind that's overly active, thank you for sharing. I hear you. And I feel your challenge. And I'm here for you to bring you peace, to encourage you, to shed some light on your concern. And so together we approach life in a loving way. How can I be loving in this circumstance for you? We ask our body, our mind, our emotions. How can I help you set yourself free? And then we listen. Maybe the little child within says, put on some music and dance as if no one is watching. And then we find a laugh arising from within. And then we go and put on some music and find ourselves dancing around the room and saying, thank you. Thank you, Spirit, for giving me some guidance. I'll remember to listen to you. We take an integrating breath and we return to center, that place that's always there waiting for our attention. We breathe in again. And we come to rest as the self within the self, knowing that it's always there, already waiting for our attention. And so to this loving presence within us and all around us, let's say together, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the awakening presence of love.
You are the awakening presence.
Shining through. Revealing as. Expressing for. The one who knows no other and yet is always there, smiling within our hearts, blossoming within our souls, and dancing in life as if no one is watching. Life belongs to you. Do with it as you will. We open our eyes and we smile, we lift up our hands, and we say, and so it is. Yee-haw.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.